duty of foresight is a choice, and it's not grounded in law. It's grounded in our shared humanity and understanding that we're responsible for one another, and that our work on foresight, especially at the board level, is not about us. It's about helping those who will follow us in the years and decades ahead.
Hi, I'm Christine Shaw, CEO and President of Naylor Association Solutions, and I'm your host of the Association Advisor Podcast. We'll learn from successful association executives, partners, and clients on how to create a thriving, prosperous, and value-driven association. I invite you to join me in keeping informed and, most importantly, keeping your association profitable. Our goal is to leave you feeling inspired, more confident, and more knowledgeable. This is the Association Advisor Podcast. Hi, and welcome back to the Association Advisor Podcast, brought to you by Naylor Association Solutions. I'm your host, Christine Shaw. Today's episode is all about the future. Technology remains at the forefront of innovation and will continue to play an essential role. Today, we will explore ways for your organization to be nimble and ready for whatever the future brings. Joining me for this discussion is Jeff DeCagna, AIMP, FRSA, FASAE, and Executive Advisor for Foresight First. Jeff is the perfect person to speak about this topic. We'll talk to Jeff about what it means for an association to have foresight and how organizations can thrive in an ever-changing world. Jeff will also share what he's learned about leadership and stewardship over the course of a career advising associations and nonprofits. This episode will leave you with a lot of great information, so let's dive right in. Welcome, Jeff. I'm so excited to have you on this episode of the Association Advisor.
Thank you, Christine. It's a pleasure and really a privilege to join you.
Well, I can't wait to get into this conversation. There's a lot to talk about. So first, let's talk a little bit about you. So you refer to yourself as an association contrarian. What exactly do you mean by that? Tell our audience, please.
Well, you know, for years in my, especially in my pre-consulting career, and I was always kind of pushing the conversation in ways that, you know, maybe made people feel uncomfortable. I was questioning things quite a bit. And so I got called a lot of different things. Sometimes I was known as a provocateur. Some people called me a bomb thrower, not necessarily, you know, always flattering, you know, kind of language. And then eventually it came around to the word contrarian. And I didn't really like that at the beginning, but then I started to lean into it because what I realized was that the contrarian in this context is someone who is trying to push the conversation in a purposeful way, right? So it's purposeful provocation, not just an exercise, not just an activity, you know, or for its own sake. And that's what I've tried to do over the course of my career. As I said, both before I became an advisor and certainly in these last now 22 plus years, this is my 23rd year of consulting, I've tried to honor that persona, but it's not performative for me. It's something that I try to do with intention, especially working with boards, to give them a different perspective and challenge them to adopt a different perspective on the issues that they're confronting. So for me, it's a purposeful provocation that attempts to move the conversation in new directions, even if they might be uncomfortable for those who are participating.
I really like that because, you know, I think what happens is, I say this all the time, is we get caught in our own ecosystem. And unless you are opening yourself up to a contrarian view or a different perspective, you sometimes can't see what's outside of what you're thinking about or looking at all day long. So I think that's brilliant, really good information there, a good purpose in what that means. So I really like that. You know, one of the things people may or may not know is you do a column through the Association Advisor, our brand, and you've advocated for the duty of foresight. What do association boards and CEOs need to know about the duty of foresight and why it's so important?
I appreciate you mentioning the column and thank you for the opportunity to write for Association Advisor. It's been going on for the last several years. And, you know, the duty of foresight is a term that I coined in 2014, actually in an article in Associations Now, and that wasn't how I'd set out. I set out to write an article about BlackBerry and how did a company like BlackBerry go from being the, you know, not just the most dominant technology company of that time or of its heyday, but one of the most dominant companies overall of any kind. And how did it go from that to something that nearly got sold off to private equity very close to the time, just years before I wrote my column. And as someone who had been a longtime BlackBerry user, I wanted to understand how this could happen. And one of the things that I uncovered, there were many other things that I uncovered through my research, but one of the things that I uncovered was really the board of that company, what started out as Research in Motion became BlackBerry, really failed at what I ended up calling the duty of foresight, which was anticipating a world in which their very dominant product and their very dominant business model would not be so dominant, that there would be forces beyond their control that would affect the situation. And I realized in writing that article back in 2014 that there was something important there for association boards to understand. So really for the last 10 years, I've been advocating for writing about the duty of foresight. That's the name of the column on associationadvisor.com. And you know, now this is the 10-year milestone in 2024. And throughout this year, I've been doing a lot of podcast conversations about the duty of foresight, not as a celebration. This is not a celebration of me. It's not a celebration of the idea. It's a reminder of the importance of the duty of foresight for association boards. The duty of foresight is a choice that boards make. It's not mandated like the duties of care, loyalty, and obedience are. It's a choice, but I think it's a highly ethical choice. I think it's a wise choice. And it's not grounded in law. It's grounded in our shared humanity and understanding that we're responsible for one another, and that our work on foresight, especially at the board level, is not about us. It's about helping those who will follow us in the years and decades ahead. So I think for association boards and for CEOs, what's important to understand about the duty of foresight is that this is really a way for a board and for an association to recognize that it has responsibilities larger than themselves, larger than what they are doing on a day-to-day basis, and that they are creating futures for people who will never be known to them personally, people who will not become part of the association for years or decades into the future, but their work of foresight is going to try to leave it better than how they found it for those long-term successors. And that's really where the duty of foresight is standing today. And I've been very privileged to write many articles related to the duty of foresight on Association Advisor, including several this year, that really tells the story about how the duty of foresight came to be and why, in my view, remains a radical idea 10 years later, which I think is, for me, very important to see it as something that is still pushing us toward the future rather than something that has become more accepted, even though I think it has become more accepted. I really want us to see it as a little bit edgier than that, a little bit more radical, because that's the way we maintain our momentum in thinking about and learning with the future.
Boy, you know, you've given me so much to think about there, Jeff. I mean, I might come back to you in a separate capacity and learn even more about how you go about working with boards and CEOs. I think it's something we could all benefit from. And, you know, you're right, because as the CEO of Naylor, we get very focused on the now and the present. But to your point, the foresight in the future is so important to the longevity and sustainability of any association or company for that matter. It would be interesting to see, because as you point out, it's not really celebratory, but it's really a learning journey you took everyone on and continue to do. It would be interesting to handpick a few case studies that you could really pull out of the work you've done there and see what that's telling us and what we can learn from that in the future. The other thing that resonated with me there is I think I was one of the last BlackBerry users to give up. Like I hung on. I was like, I'm never going to Apple. That's it. I'm doubling down. But now I understand the connection with BlackBerry because, yeah, my goodness, talk about foresight or lack thereof in that situation. But anyway, that was fascinating. Thank you for sharing that. And I'm confident listeners will find this equally as fascinating as I have. So let's jump into something else. In your opinion, what are the most significant forces and factors that are reshaping the world in which association operates? And it really ties into this whole duty of foresight topic. So tell us a little bit about that and how boards can address these changes as they come about.
Yeah. And I want to answer this in two ways, because there's obviously individual issues that are on the agenda or should be for every association. But then there's a larger picture. And the larger picture is important. And I'm actually written an article that is going to be on Association Advisor later this week, 2 days after we, you know, have our podcast, so that people can read more about that. And so let me talk about the first part. I mean, clearly, as we look at the combination of social, technological, economic, environmental, and political forces and factors, there's a lot to be thinking about there, whether it's the ongoing social tension, the danger to relationships that exist in a place where people are feeling such anxiety and they're feeling more disconnected, more isolation, and all kinds of concerns that are really affecting people in their day-to-day lives. And some of that exacerbated by our adoption of technologies that are hard to understand. They have nonlinear implications. People are looking at AI as something that on the one hand could be really beneficial, but could also end up really fundamentally changing not only their work lives, but their personal lives as well. And we're looking at economic concerns, and we have, you know, environmental concerns. The climate crisis remains a huge issue. And we obviously have a lot of political division, not just in the United States, but around the world. So there's all kinds of issues like that that are affecting the operating environment for associations. But, you know, as of today, we have 71 days until the second half of the turbulent 20s, the next 60 months, as I like to refer to them. And those next 60 months are not going to be easy. We've already seen what's happened in the first 60 months as a result of a global health emergency. We're still feeling those effects, even though we don't talk about it as much as we were just a few years ago, but they haven't gone away. And then as we look at what's ahead of us, I'm concerned that we haven't really fully comprehended the impact of what's going to be coming out. And I talk about it in three ways in the article, in the column that's on Thursday, which is first, systemic upheaval. We're seeing a lot more upheaval in our environment because of all those factors that I talked about, upheaval domestically and around the world. And that's going to continue and intensify. That upheaval is going to create more risk for our organizations, and boards are going to have to be prepared for understanding the full implications of that risk. It's not just financial. It's also reputational, technological, exists in a variety of forms. And then there are systemic problems that have to be solved. And lots of organizations in our community have problems that have been issues for them for many years and decades. Their ecosystems, we talked about the ecosystems earlier, you know, their ecosystems, their professional or industry ecosystems might also be having problems, and they are a part of those ecosystems. And really, this is the time, as soon as possible, to really focus our attention on how can we solve those problems, because the upheaval is not going to diminish. The risk is going to increase. We want to make ourselves less vulnerable in this environment and more capable of acting on the bigger picture issues that are going to happen. So the Thursday column is going to cover a lot of that in more detail and how it relates to what boards should be thinking about in terms of their stewardship imperatives for the work that they do.
First of all, I cannot wait to read it. So I will be at the edge of my seat waiting for that article to come out, and I'm going to read it. But you bring up so many good points. You know, if you think about it, every decade brings its own unique set of challenges and issues to face. But to your point, starting off 2020 with this global pandemic, that's totally changed how we operate, how we think. And at the same time, social media has accelerated to its highest adoption use platforms ever. And you put that all together, plus the political unrest and everything that's going on, and it certainly feels heavy. And, you know, one thing I see a lot that you didn't see previously as a leader, this thing about isolation, the way it's affecting people, their mental health, how they're able to focus and operate when you have people combination working from home and, you know, trying to figure out how to make this all work with everything else going around. It really is just a different operating environment. And I think a lot of boards and CEOs, myself in that included, struggle with that because it's not as easy as a problem to solve. You know, we've always had technology and we came out with the internet and all the evolutions of that, but there just seems like so many things are woven into that. So I really do like this topic and diving into it. And I will stay on the journey along with what you're writing to learn more. So thank you for that.
I think you're spot on with what you're saying. And I think the other aspect to it that is different today, different in this decade, and really as a consequence of many of the things that have happened in these first nearly 5 years, is that, you know, the multiple crises that are happening right now are all reinforcing each other. So it used to be that we would look at things like risk as, well, we have this single risk or this single issue, but now they are having a cumulative effect on one another. We see how global conflict, like the two wars going on right now, affect economic issues, how they affect, you know, underlying political issues, how they are influenced by the environment, how the environment influences social issues, you know, and how the economy is affected by technology. So the reinforcing critical and crisis level issues that our society is facing have an effect in multiple unpredictable ways. And we have to have decision making at the board level supported in conjunction with CEOs and other senior staff and other contributors, really thinking about this in a systems way. And that's why the article on Thursday is really about how do we address issues of systemic upheaval, systemic risk, and systemic problems at that level, because that's what they need to be focusing on. That's how their attention should be directed within the context, not only of our short-term actions, but also our long-term view.
Such great insight there. So again, can't wait to read this. Now, another thing you've written about is orthodox beliefs as a barrier to learning. So talk to us a little bit about how you believe association boards can overcome that barrier.
When I first started talking about orthodox beliefs, probably 15 or more years ago, I never really believed that they would become so central to the work that I do. I sort of thought, okay, this is important and we need to keep it on the radar screen, keep it active in the conversation. But then the more I started thinking about it, the more I was working with boards in conversations where they kept coming up, I realized this has now become the most critical conversation that I have with most boards and other decision-making groups. We have to start with the orthodoxy conversation. And orthodox beliefs, just to be clear, are the deep-seated assumptions we make about how the world works. And in the case of our associations, it's the world of the association or the world of the board or the world of the industry and profession, all these overlapping worlds in which the orthodoxy exists and interacts with one another. And orthodoxy is incredibly detrimental because it creates inertia. And, you know, to use a word that I was talking about with someone in a conversation recently, it creates paralysis in our decision-making. It creates all kinds of negative impact. And one of those most significant negative impact is around the inability to learn. Like if one is consumed by orthodox beliefs, or if you think your belief system is guiding you in the right direction, then the incentive to learn is very much diminished. So part of the way that boards have to work to overcome this is, first of all, to recognize the existence of orthodoxy in their organizations. They have to understand that many of the beliefs that their organizations operate on, many of the beliefs on which decisions have been made over long periods of time, were maybe never true in the first place. They were just what was perpetuated. They were repeated over and over again. And people started, okay, well, that's how we think about things. And that perpetuation of orthodoxy has influenced decision-making to the point now where orthodox beliefs are so deeply embedded, they're invisible to us. And so we have to make them visible again. And then we have to talk about them. Was this ever true? Is this helpful? Even if it is true, is it helpful to us in 2024 to still think this way? Or do we have to challenge that belief? And really, we've gotten to the point now where I believe that boards really have to be prepared for a reckoning with their orthodox beliefs, because there are so many of them. Once people start to get the feel in conversations that I have with boards and other groups about what orthodoxy is, it kind of pops the cork on the champagne a little bit, because people like say, oh, I get it. Yes, I understand now. And they come flowing out, you know, and all of a sudden I've done surveys recently where, you know, people maybe are a little reluctant at first. And all of a sudden you end up with a list of, you know, 150 or 200 orthodox beliefs that people have surfaced. And that's, you know, an incredible way of recognizing that there's a lot of beliefs in our organizations that are antiquated. I like to sometimes describe them as the noise of the past.
Yeah.
And we have to turn down that noise at this moment, because we have to be able to hear better the signals of the future that's coming at us. So it's that process of really having deep and serious ongoing conversations around orthodoxy, that this way they're not infiltrating and not really undermining our decision-making process, so that we can turn our decisions where they really need to be focused, which is on the future, not the perpetuation of the way we've done things over years and decades. So it's a challenging conversation. It's a very tough conversation for boards, but it's a necessary one. And it's also really good practice for them to have that tough conversation right away, because they're going to have a lot more tough conversations as this decade continues. But this is one, at least, where they have a really good grounding in the material, if you will, because they're very familiar with what those orthodoxies can be, because they've been in the association for a long time. So this is a way to really get them, you know, I'm an educator, so I like things that do two things. The orthodoxy conversation is necessary in its own right, but it also prepares them for more difficult conversations ahead.
Yeah, that makes sense. And staying on this topic, though, Jeff, tell us specifically what practices you believe association boards can adopt to guide their organizations into the future.
So really everything that, you know, we've been talking about so far, whether it's the duty of foresight or thinking and acting beyond orthodoxy, which is really the way that I talk about it, or focusing on intentional learning, the importance of that, are all practices that boards and associations can be adopting. And I think of them as next practices. I think that the conversation around best practices has in some ways taken us astray, because in most cases, best practices perpetuate the orthodoxy rather than challenging it, rather than liberating us from it. And so I think that when we focus our attention on foresight, we make the work of foresight a central aspect of what we do. We build a consistent practice of foresight in the work that the organization is doing, the work the board is doing. When we focus our attention on orthodoxy and trying to challenge it, thinking and acting beyond it, because you need both those things. It's not enough to recognize it's there. You also have to think beyond it. And making learning a central part of what everyone is doing, you know, redesigning internal processes and practices, coming up with better ways for the board to work and for other groups to work. All of those next practices are available to us to create and implement in our organizations. We don't have to rely upon the practices of the past. And I think the more that boards and CEOs, decision makers, committees are working together to think about what's the practice we need here to make this work better with a very core principle in mind, which is we need a practice that turns our attention toward the future. And the more that those practices are designed with that intention in mind, the better that our organizations can function. But it's going to be uncomfortable because people are not accustomed to doing it that way. But that's a necessary and beneficial discomfort. Again, it's not performative. It's an intentional way of thinking about our organizations in a very different manner.
And, you know, let's talk a little bit more about boards. So another thing you're known for saying or writing about is having association boards that are fit for purpose. What exactly does that mean and how do you achieve it?
Well, you know, it's fit for purpose boards is a four-word phrase that has a lot of things that go into it. It's definitely a challenge to get to that place. But again, it's a necessary, you know, step. And it begins with many of the things we've been talking about. The way that I like to think about it is it's a combination of stewardship, governing, and foresight. That's the methodology that I've been building really over the course of the last, I'd say probably now 17 years. Back in 2007, I wrote an article for Associations Now again. And the article was, it was an article that I wrote because at the time I was working with associations on innovation. That was my initial entry into the advisory field for associations. How can associations be better at innovating and in really building a discipline of innovation in their organizations? And the challenge that I confronted working with CEOs was that boards were getting in the way of their pursuit of innovation. So there needed to be a way to for boards to think differently. So in 2007, I wrote an article, and the title of the article was The Ungovernance Model. If you recall, mm-hmm. back at that time, we liked to put the word un in front of a lot of things. And the premise of that article was, I don't know what the model needs to be, but it's not this. And so I basically have spent the last, you know, roughly 16, 17 years trying to figure out what the model needed to be. And it was an iterative process of designing and thinking about different ideas and putting them together in different ways. And so now I finally think that the approach that I describe as stewardship, governing, and foresight, cleverly abbreviated SGF, is the way to think about what it means to be fit for purpose. Setting a higher standard of stewardship, governing, and foresight, recognizing that as a board member, a board director or officer, you are part of a group that has stewardship responsibility for the association, and that that stewardship responsibility is very clear, leaving the association better than how you found it. And in order to do that, you have to do the work of governing, but your work of governing has to be oriented toward the future. You need future adaptive governing rather than something that is stuck in the noise of the past of orthodoxy or in the bylaws or, you know, in our history, our tradition, that is focused on where we're headed. And then overlapping with that is the necessity of foresight as a way of thinking about the work that we do. Now, again, we're going to focus on that long-term view. And at the center of the stewardship, governing, and foresight, the core around which all three of those ideas operate is the duty of foresight, because it's the thing that ties it all together. The duty of foresight is about stewardship. It is about how we govern. And of course, it is about our work and our commitment to foresight. So I think, you know, there's a lot of detail, and many of the articles that I've written recently on Association Advisor really speak to this in a lot more detail, including a recent series I did on the three stewardship imperatives for fit for purpose association boards and other articles this year and in years previously. You know, that's really the focus of fit for purpose boards, setting that higher standard of stewardship, governing, and foresight.
No, that's really helpful and spot on. Those are the three things, if you think about it, that come into play when you're thinking about a board and how to manage an association. And speaking of this, so you've done a lot of work and have learned a lot, studied a lot, written a lot. And with all that expertise, you've recently launched the Future of Association Boards, FAB, a community dialogue group. So tell us what this is about and how to participate.
The FAB community, we call it FAB, the FAB community dialogue, we wanted to be a little bit fun, right? Because, you know, boards aren't necessarily the most fun topic for everybody. I find them interesting and compelling, but not everyone does. And so the Future of Association Boards FAB community dialogue, I'm partnering with the association management company Impexium on this work. And we just started in August. Still in the early phases of this work, but it's an ongoing process. I like to refer to it as an intentional learning process, an intentional learning initiative, if you will, that will continue through the rest of 2024 and into 2025. And really, we're using LinkedIn as the platform, mostly because everyone is there, you know, that I know, certainly in the association community, many other people in associations are there too. And everyone, every stakeholder in associations is welcome to participate in our initiative. It's open to anyone who wants to be a part of the conversations. And each month we're having a conversation about a particular topic, and we're launching polls in our group. We have a LinkedIn group that people can join. We have a regular biweekly newsletter that people can subscribe to. We encourage you to do both. We have monthly meetings, some form online. We have a kickoff meeting each month for whatever the conversation is going to be in that particular month. We close each month with a Zoom meeting so we can have discussions about what we've learned in that month. And it's very inclusive and very open. And we're trying to understand at a very basic level, at a very foundational level, you know, what's the purpose of boards? How do we ensure their purpose is focused on the future? What does the composition of our boards need to be? The dynamics of those boards? What is the work of boards of the future? You know, we're getting down to the very basic foundational levels of what boards are about, or association boards specifically are about. And again, we look forward to having everyone involved, and we intend to, in early 2025, we'll release a, in some form, yet to be determined exactly what form it'll take, possibly an infographic, some preliminary findings, some preliminary results of our conversations to the community so people can know what we're doing. And then we will have a longer report that will be available next summer, probably sometime in July of 2025, that will come out ahead of ASA's annual meeting in Los Angeles, because we want to have that conversation with people even after the formal discussions online begin to taper off. We want the report to be the place that we continue to have those discussions. So we're excited about it and happy to anyone to contact me, or maybe we can share those links to join our group and become part of the discussion.
That's fantastic. I'm going to check it out myself. What a great initiative. And it is FAB. So Nice play on words there, or abbreviations, if you will. And so, Jeff, this has been such a fascinating conversation. I mean, I've learned a lot just going through this, and I'm going to study some of the things you mentioned and really tune into it. So one of the things we always ask our guests at the end of each interview is to share a recommended reading book so that people can continue to learn. And I have no doubt yours is going to be fabulous just based on your background. So tell us what you've got for us in terms of recommendation.
We started off our conversation with a question about my being a contrarian. And so I'm going to honor that persona by being a little bit contrarian in what I have to offer here, which is, rather than a book, I'm going to recommend a question for everyone to think about. And the reason why is because books are great, and there are lots of books that people should read. But what I think can be even more helpful is, rather than a specific book, is to offer you a question to think about that will guide you toward books that would be of use to you in figuring out how you want to answer that question. I think that, you know, coming at reading anything from a place of inquiry is always a great place. And so I want to propose the question that I ask all the time of boards, and that really has become the preoccupying question of my professional life, which is, what will our successors say about us? I think it's so important for boards, for CEOs, for any decision maker in any association to be asking themselves, you know, when am I sitting in this place and thinking about my role and the contribution that I make, it's not just about what I want to have happen. I am here in a position of responsibility that is going to either serve those who follow us or not serve them. Maybe it'll serve a short-term interest versus a long-term interest. or maybe it'll serve something that's more self-interested versus more shared interest. So we've got to have a view about how what we're doing is not just making things maybe marginally better today, but how we can really leave it better for those that we'll never know personally. And that's the critical aspect to this. Yeah. The people we're talking about are people we'll never know personally, and they will join our organizations or become part of our communities in the rest of the years of this decade, the decade ahead. We'll never have a relationship with them, but nevertheless, they will evaluate, they will judge what we did or didn't do in 2024, 2025. So if we really want to think about our long-term impact, I think a great question for everyone to ask themselves is, what will our successors say about us? And how can we ensure that what we're doing is in service of them even more so than maybe it's in service of us? So hopefully that question will guide people toward things that they can read or resources they can access that will help them figure out what they want their answer to be about how they contribute in whatever role they're playing now in associations and whatever roles they might play in the future.
I like that. You know, leave everyone with that thought and question to answer to lead to where you need to find the information. I like that, Jeff. I'm going to share one fun fact with the audience, because even though we've only met in person one time, in that small interaction we had, what I realized is Jeff has this gift, which is you are the best gift giver. So one of our marketing people you've worked with, Najla, who's done some great work for you, you gave her one of the best gifts. It was like, it was a coffee cup, not just the coffee mug, but the subscription and all the thoughtful things that went into it. And I was like, wow, it just stuck with me because it speaks a lot about your character and who you are. So I really enjoyed that, Jeff. So how can people stay in touch or follow you and your various initiatives and efforts outside the Association Advisor column?
Sure. So two best ways to get in touch with me are to find me on LinkedIn, and they can go to jeffonlinkedin.com. I have my own little custom URL there that makes it a little bit simpler for conversations like this. So again, it's jeffonlinkedin.com, or they can just email me at jeff@foresightfirst.io. Always happy to hear from listeners to the podcast that I do and readers of the column, and I hope people will check out the column coming out on Thursday. I think they'll find that pretty compelling, and future columns, because I certainly enjoy being a part of Association Advisor's lineup of content contributors and look forward to continuing that in the future. And again, I appreciate that opportunity. And thank you for what you said about the gift. Najla has done a wonderful job helping me with the column since she's taken that over. And I'm very grateful for her support. And I wanted to do something more than just say it. I wanted to demonstrate it. And this was the first time we'd ever met in person. So I wanted to let her know how much I appreciate her and the work that she does that helps me be better at what I do.
Well, thank you for sharing this and your time. You've been really generous with your time and your contributions. So we're grateful for the partnership, Jeff, and look forward to reading more of your columns. So thanks a lot.
Thank you, Christine. I appreciate it.
Thank you for listening to the Association Advisor podcast, brought to you by Naylor Association Solutions. If you'd like to access more resources to serve your association needs or join our newsletter, you can visit our website at naylor.com or just click the links in the show notes of this episode. Please be sure to follow us on your favorite podcast listening app, like Spotify, Apple, or wherever you listen to your podcast, so you won't miss an episode. Also, I'd love to hear from my listeners directly. Feel free to email me at christine@naylor.com. Until next time, we at Naylor are wishing your association success.